Time now for Poetically Speaking, our ongoing series highlighting poetry in Michigan. Tarfia Faizula was born in Brooklyn, raised in Texas, but she now makes her home in Detroit. Her first book of poems is called Seam. It won the Crab Orchard Series in Poetry First Book Award. Her poems bring us the stories of the 200 to 400,000 Bangladeshi women who were raped during that country's 1971 Liberation War. It was a conflict that saw East Pakistan and India at war with West Pakistan, and that war led to the birth of the Bangladeshi Republic. Tarfia Faizula, welcome to the program. So good to have you with us.
Thanks so much for having me.
So you were born in the United States in 1980, and you were spared living through this war, but what about your family?
Both of my parents were in Bangladesh during the war. My father would have been a teenager, and my mother was a young girl. During that time. And I didn't really hear very much about the war growing up until I happened upon this material about these women and then sort of realized that there was all of this history that was very much a part of my heritage and my family's heritage that I didn't end up realizing was there.
Like a light goes on. Tell us more about these women.
Well, these women were anywhere from, I don't know, the teens to their 30s. And they were raped by the Pakistani army during the war and also taken as sex slaves. And after the war was over, these women were lionized with the honorary term Birangana, which literally means war heroine. But as is often the case, I think it didn't really do what it was intended to do. It didn't take away the stigma from what they had experienced. And so they were often shunned by their social circles and their families. And
so given kind of a honorary title by the government, but in day-to-day life, there was a stigma.
Right. Absolutely.
Mm. Yeah. What struck you so much that it led you to produce these poems? And you made a trip, didn't you?
Yeah.
To talk with them.
Yeah. Well, I started writing the first of the interview poems in graduate school. I wanted to try to embody the voice of someone who had gone through that experience in wartime. But I eventually hit, I guess, a kind of ethical wall. I felt like I wasn't sure if I had the permission or the authority to speak for these women. And I realized that a lot of my research was just, it was so superficial. It was little bits and pieces here and there. And I also really wanted to be in Bangladesh, to be in the landscape of that country writing these poems. So I applied for a Fulbright, and through the help of the Fulbright, I was able to go to Bangladesh and interview a number of these women and eventually wrote a book about the experience.
What did it do for you inside as you talked with these women and you heard their stories and then processed them into writing these poems? What did that do for your own identity?
Oh, gosh, so many things. I grew up in West Texas in Midland, in the Midland-Odessa area, and I was pretty confused, I think, the way a lot of young people, first-generation the product of first-generation immigrants often are, I think, very confused about how to negotiate the culture that I was living in with the culture that was brought from Bangladesh via my parents and their social circles.
One foot in each world.
Right. And to complicate matters, my family is also Muslim, so there's a religious aspect there, too, that was confusing to navigate for a long time because I went to an Episcopalian private school. So I had this whole kind of range of experiences. And so I spent a lot of time, I've spent most of my life just trying to understand what it is to be a person in the world that has, you know, these attachments to various identities but isn't necessarily beholden to a single one of them. So, I ended up going to Bangladesh in part to try to understand that the Bangladeshi aspects of myself, I guess, and the Muslim aspects of myself. And also, I think, what it is to be a Bangladeshi woman, just period, which I think is a very difficult and complicated experience oftentimes. And I was also, I was raped myself in high school, so I felt a kinship with the women as well. Not a kinship exactly. I sort of felt like there was, even though the contexts are so very different.
Certainly.
And not really comparable.
But it was sexual violence.
But sexual violence.
Yeah. Well, if you would you share some of the poems with us now? And again, these are interviews. And tell us again that honorary name that these women have.
Birangana.
All right. Yeah.
Interview with a Birangana. What were you doing when they came for you? Gleaming water sweeps over mother's feet, bayonets, teeth. My green and yellow Eid sari flaps damply between two palm trees. Grandfather calls to me, Mishti Maya, girl of sweetness. Ashi, I call back. I finish braiding my hair, tie it tight. I twine a red string around my thigh. That evening, a blade sliced through string, through skin, red on red on red. Kutta, the man in khaki says. It is only later I realize it is me he is calling dog, dog, dog. Interview with Ibrangana, 2. Where did the Pakistani military take you, and were there others there? Past the apothecary shop, shut down, burned flat, my heart seized, I told it to hush. They saw its shape and weight and wanted it too. Past the red mosque, where I first learned to touch my forehead low, to utter the wet words blown from my mouth again and again. Past the school draped with banners imploring, free our language, a rope steady around my throat as they pushed me toward the dark room, the silence clotted thick with a rotten smell, dense like pear blossoms, long strands of jute braided fast around our wrists. Yes, yes, there were others there.
That's poet Tarfia Faizullah reading from her award-winning first book of poetry, Seam. Her book brings us the stories of the 200,000 to 400,000 Bangladeshi women who were raped during that country's 1971 liberation war. That is so powerful and so moving. Did that process exorcise demons, if you will, from your own sexual assault when you were young?
I think the most powerful thing that happened is I stopped being afraid. There was something about the experience of, you know, not just hearing about these women's horror stories, but just seeing them in their lives, and you know, they laugh, you know, and as I think we all do in the end after we've been through something like that. And so I got great strength from you know, for example, seeing I was interviewing an entire family of sisters who this had all happened to. And of course, before I went to Bangladesh, it never occurred to me that it would happen to a whole family of sisters. And so seeing them take care of each other was really powerful. And I remember I was interviewing one sister and another one came up behind me and she started playing with my hair. And in Bangladesh, you don't see just curly hair kind of out and about. The upper class women tend to straighten it in salons and the working class tend to tie it back. So my hair, which is actually pretty Bangladeshi, was a signal of my foreignness somehow. And so a sister came up behind me and she started playing with my hair and she said, "You poor thing, you must have no one to comb your hair for you." And that experience was just, it just shook me to my core because I felt like I've been so afraid all along of being vulnerable, and here these women are seeing me as something vulnerable. And I felt like rather than, you know, sort of like build the walls around me even higher, I felt like I was able to sort of just like stand straight again, which is really profound and beautiful.
I want to talk a little about your writing, Tarfia. What drew you to poetry in the first place and when?
Well, I think my first experience of poetry was hearing the Quran growing up. My father has a really beautiful recitation voice, and he's acted as an imam before. And, you know, like there, I learned that sound has meaning. You know, it's not just the definition of the words, it's also the sounds themselves have meaning. I think that's why we respond to song and melody the way we do. So that was my first early experience. And then, you know, and my mother also sort of like had me, she was really young when she had me, she was 18. And so what she had were nursery rhymes. And so she gave me nursery rhymes. And so I memorized these nursery rhymes at a really early age.
And the rhythm.
Yeah. And then the sort of the meaning of the words. There's a tape of me from a really young age, you know, sort of like vacillating between Bengali poetry and English poetry. And so I think those were just the earliest kind of like beginnings of it.
Can you describe the feelings you get when you're in the middle of writing a poem?
Oh, God, there's nothing like it. I think poetry has this quality of being able to sustain you in a feeling and sustain you in a moment. It can hold you there like a spell can. And so I feel when I'm writing, I feel sort of like held there. You know, I can't leave it. And I can't leave it until I've sort of like, almost like a scientific experiment, I've exhausted the possibilities and reached a conclusion and found that there was an argument I was articulating that I didn't know all along. And so what it feels like to me is like learning. It feels like learning, and I think there's, when you're really learning, I don't think there's anything more exciting. I don't think there's any greater drug than the feeling of sort of your brain being hit by a voltage of knowledge, you know? So
and emotion.
And emotion, absolutely. Yeah.
Definitely so, in these. A lot of emotion. Yeah. What do you see as the role of the poet?
I think the role of the poet is to not look away when you see something. Yeah, I think it's to look squarely at something and take the risk of trying to get that, what you see, across. You know, not just reportage, but interrogation, you know. Mm-hmm. I think like I don't think it's an accident that classical oratory is so much like poetry. I mean, we trace our tradition back to music and to recitation both. And I think, you know, language, I heard poet Marie Howe say this recently. She said that language is action. And I think I really agree with that. I feel like being able to look at something squarely on and being willing to try to encapsulate as much of it as possible in as pure a way as possible, and in as idiosyncratic a way as possible. You know, I think
Your
own unique voice. Yeah.
Well, I'm wondering if you'd end by reading a poem from the end of your journey and at the end of your book, Seam.
Oh, sure.
And this one is?
This is Reading Willa Cather in Bangladesh. And it begins with a line from her novel, Song of the Lark. There were again things which seemed destined for her. I would give it up. This heaviness built of neither silence nor snow. I am there, but here, back in Virginia, walking through shadows of leaves imprinted damp on gray sidewalks. I would look toward their soil-etched wings and curl away from dim corners where shadows must be rubbed away from mirrors, where a TV might flicker with the figure of a woman dressed in green, reading the news aloud from blue-inked pages. Daily, it is possible to forget. I would give it up. The commotion of wrought iron windows looking out to fields of tea and rice, the failed light pouring through. I would turn from beggar hands pressed against glass, their hungry and open mouths. I would rather be here, pacing in a room papered with shadows of bare oak limbs, than there, sitting quietly in each dark room that holds its breath, waits for the hum of a generator to light its cement walls.
That is Hamtramck poet Tarfia Faizullah reading from her first book of poems. It's called Seam. It was a pleasure to meet you. Thank you so much for sharing
Thank you.
Your journey with us and your poems with us.
Well, thank you so much for having me. It's been great.